session number 28624, rule 7.
Session 4, and I'm back with Mr. Kinghorn. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to go back to some of the things that we were speaking about last time about Zanzibar. And you told me about that you were living in the bungalow and that you had the mess staff who were preparing your food and such like. I was just wondering, do you think it was easy enough for them to obtain this, you know, obtain the food?
Yeah, it wouldn't have been complicated. Really, deliveries were made. We were on a mixture of tinned and fresh rations. Zanzibar itself doesn't produce a great deal. I mean, it's really bananas are all I remember sort of growing wild even, but there wouldn't have been a huge amount you could purchase there. But typical of any mess, you know, you do get an allocation of funds from the main mess, which was up in Gilgit in Kenya. And we also contributed ourselves, each officer. But that only allowed you just a little more in the way of fresh rations, and that would be largely fruit. But otherwise we were supplied by the East Africa Command Headquarters' normal way of doing it through the Royal Army Service Corps, and we received a mixture of vegetables and a lot of tinned food as well.
Okay, so you don't think it was a problem?
No, it wasn't a problem, and we were supplied.
What about fish? Did you get fish?
I don't remember getting fish there at all. The Indian Ocean would certainly be a happy breeding ground for a lot of fish, but and fishermen would have gone out. It's possible that we did get some at the market, but I don't particularly remember. I don't particularly remember eating well there, I have to say. But unlike Kenya, where food was very good, but then we've got huge ranches and supplies come in without any problem. Zanzibar is a small island and not well stocked.
Have you any idea how they disposed of their waste on Zanzibar? Was it like a Western society where it was just taken away, or did you have to look after, you know, getting rid of waste?
I don't really. I mean, we would have been responsible for our own area, and as I said, the tented camp, so you know, the cookhouse waste, the latrine waste, everything else would have gone back into the ground. I mean, it was a question of digging pits the whole time, which is what you do wherever you set up a tented camp. When we won maneuvers in Kenya, the same thing applies. So you know, we'd have been particular about that, because if you're not, not only does it litter up the island for the rest of the population, but of course it spreads disease, so we'd have been particular about that, but it would have been pits.
What about pests? Were pests of any type, you know, insects or anything, a problem there?
I don't think they were. I remember Kenya, there was a huge tick problem. But Zanzibar, I don't recall at all. And we had access, living on the beach as we did. I mean, there was never a problem of getting into the sea. And in fact, that's what you wanted to do, a very hot climate. So we were, unlike Kenya, where you went days and even weeks without a shower or access to water, and ticks were a huge problem. Zanzibar, I think we were pretty free from it.
You mentioned that the climate was hot. Was there ever rain or anything, or was it just hot?
No, I mean, there would have been rain, but very little of it. The temperatures were high, but it was a green island. I mean, the big banana ferns, palms were in evidence. Fruit did grow, not a huge variety, but it was quite green, so it must have got the rain it needed during the course of the year. I was only there for 3 months, and it was summer, so I suppose it was likely always to be hot and dry, but it must have got some winter rain, otherwise it wouldn't have been a nice green coral island that it was.
And whilst you were there, were you expected to keep your kit to the same standard?
Yes, we were. Keeping the peace, which was our role, meant that in much of the day you were in combat fatigues because you were generally patrolling. By day and night, we were patrolling. But when we weren't doing that, keeping the peace entailed being seen and in smart kit. We did hold a number of parades just to attract the crowds and show them that we were there and remind them of our role. And so we did have our tropical kit, you know, our white doublets and kilts and spats and so on. And we did put on a show for them. The pipe band visited us from battalion headquarters in Gilgil in Kenya several times, so we were able to entertain the local population, and that we did, always looking smart.
And was it difficult to keep your kit quite smart, you know, in the conditions you were living in?
Yes, by and large I think it was, because the conditions were cramped. When you have a tented camp, apart from beds, you know, there would be shirt lockers and so on. But you know, these problems are there to be overcome, but it did create a problem because of the cramped nature of the quarters.
Did you still have access to irons and things, you know, to keep the shirts smart? And
yes, we did. That was important, and because when we weren't in combat fatigues, we were in khaki drill was the order of dress, and that meant starching and ironing, and that we somehow managed to achieve. You know, there was a laundry room set up by the company quartermaster sergeant where people, you know, at controlled hours could go in and just make sure their kit was up to scratch.
Okay. And as a young officer, did you still have to do your own kit, or did you have someone looking after it?
No, I was on arrival. I was allocated a batman by the platoon sergeant. Platoon sergeant was Jim Hutton, and he allocated me a private Urquhart, who came from Aberdeen, and he became my batman. So he was responsible for keeping me shipshape, which he managed to do.
Okay, I'd like to go back as well. You had a fast access to Zanzibar. You know, you came from Scotland, joined the regiment basically, and went straight to Zanzibar. I would have expected that you would have maybe got some lectures and things about, you know, the regiment, the area you were going into. How did you get that information once you got to Zanzibar?
Well, I was in need of information about Zanzibar. Information about the regiment and its traditions and so on, I knew a little bit about, and I was going to learn a great deal more about it, but that was over a period of time, and it wasn't vital that I know too much about the traditions of the regiment the moment I arrived in Zanzibar. What you do need to know is life in Zanzibar and what your role is. And we were lucky insofar as, although the our company commander, Angus Tindall, had been down to Zanzibar a couple of times on very short recces, sort of understudying, if you like, the company that was already there, which was A Company, commanded by Major Claude Chancellor. He would have briefed Angus Tindall once or twice during those times. When we got there, we took on, as one of our company subalterns, David Jubuli, who had been standing in for one of the A Company subalterns himself. So he had been in Zanzibar for a month already. And that was very useful. So on our arrival, you know, there was a company lecture given by David Jubuli to all of us. I mean, officers, jocks, the whole lot. And he was able to describe what Zanzibar was all about, what the political factions were, what our role was. And that would that probably served as the only briefing, you know, at the start of it. And then within a week or 10 days, it's amazing how quickly you get into it and you patrolling, by being there, by talking to people, you can start to pick up the nuances and you know who's who and what's what and what to look for. And of course, we are, when you are doing an internal security job like that, keeping the peace, you are working very closely with the police force. And on each patrol that we went out, we would have a policeman with us who knew the area and knew the people too, of course, and would be able to help us with you know, answers to any of the political questions we needed to put to him.
And how quickly did Gordon Highlander start patrolling the island? I know that there'd been a battalion there before you. Or a company, was it?
A company. They left the day we arrived, yes. Mm. Oh, well, we just started right away. Angus Tindall put in, you know, a patrol program was put into place, and off you went with compass and map, and your policeman, I have to say. And we were patrolling the Zanzibar town, and we were patrolling the Zanzibar countryside too. We were doing both, so it was a busy time. And if you're doing that day and night, you know, which you have to do, you're covering the entire island. That's good. It takes a lot of time and hard work. But the program started next day. We didn't hang around.
Do you remember how quickly you went out on patrol?
Well, I can't say that I do, but if I didn't go out next day, it would have been the day after that. We had, as I said, day and night patrols, and you, if you were on a day patrol, you were probably only out in the town for 8 hours, or out in the countryside perhaps for 12, but we also had a series of 36-hour patrols when you went out for 2 days and a night. And by virtue of the fact that we had four platoons, I mean, there were always two out, so if I didn't go out on day one, it was day two I went out.
And had you been taught about these patrols? Did you know what to expect within a patrol?
Yes, I think so, just by virtue of the fact that we were briefed on that very first day, and I don't think there were any surprises. You know, if you were actually looking for someone, you know, the police did have a number of sort of targets, that individuals that they may have been looking for who'd gone to ground, and they hadn't been able to find, just known troublemakers, perhaps something like that. And we would be looking for them, or generally there to be seen and to be reassuring every peaceful person that we were there and all was well, and at the same time perhaps looking for the odd individual, and we knew our job, and helped by the police, because we wouldn't have known one local from another one, but they certainly did.
And what type of vehicles would you have been out in?
The patrols, of course, were on foot. They weren't mechanized. If you were patrolling the town, because we were only a mile outside it or something like that, your patrol was a foot patrol from camp to town to camp, so no vehicles involved at all. If you were going to the other side of the island, or any distance into the countryside, we did have three tunners, and a platoon would just get onto one three-tunner and go off to be dropped off by the driver at whichever point you were starting from, and then would pick you up at the appointed hour at another given spot, or perhaps the same spot. But the patrols themselves were on foot, but you might use a vehicle to get you to the starting point.
And did you wear any special clothing, you know, protective clothing of any description?
No, there was no requirement for that. We wore no helmets at all. We were armed, of course, with our rifles, but no, the ordered dress was boots and gaiters, khaki drill trousers and khaki drill shirt, and tam-o-shanters, no need for helmets, so that was the order of dress.
And did you feel under threat at any point?
No, not in Zanzibar. No, No, they. The political situation, I think, was in its early stages. You know, there was a political faction who wanted to join Zanzibar to Tanganyika, which of course eventually happened. But the local populace had no great wish for this, and they were a very peaceful lot. They just really wanted to be left alone to get on with their lives. So, no, there was no force, there were no violent riots, there was just troublemakers that we were aware of, not because we saw them. That was probably the trouble, we couldn't see them. I mean, they weren't there, they would go to ground. But they were stirring things up in the back. But they didn't come out into the open because they didn't feel strong enough to do that.
And these people, you know, that you were looking for, or the troublemakers, whatever you want to call them, did you have, had you seen pictures of them?
Yes, that's right. And if we hadn't seen pictures of them, certainly the police force, who were working very closely with us, as I say, on every patrol, they knew who we were looking for. And so, you know, if you were doing a street search, going into each house as you went along the street, the photograph might have been a poor one anyway, it might not have helped you. If you really had been left to your own, You would have sort of studied face, but the policeman there would have instantly recognised who he was looking for. So you relied on him to identify, to tell you if, you know, this house was clear or not. And he, of course, would be talking to the locals, asking for information, something that we weren't able to do because it's a little bit of a tourist spot now. It really wasn't then, so there was no need for the locals talk English, and they by and large didn't. The policeman would talk to them Swahili and gain any information that he could.
Okay. Will you please describe a patrol to us, you know, and your part in this patrol as well? What would have been your part in it?
Well, it was a platoon at each time. Now, if you were out in the country, you came across tiny little hamlets, but largely you were just walking in the country across and along a track, and you know you would probably divide your platoon up into it was already divided into three sections and a platoon headquarters, and you would just go along the track spaced out, really there to be seen. I mean, although you were in a military formation, not anticipating being fired at or anything like that, so you were there to be seen. So you would walk on either side of the track, spaced out and staggered perhaps. And when you came to the village, you would keep that formation because you certainly didn't want to hide or get around the village, bypass it. You were there to be seen, so you went through the village. You might even stop, you might talk to some of the locals. You might have a rest break there, just specifically to allow people to see you, nothing more than that. In the town, you might be doing the same thing on either side of the street. If there was, if you weren't searching properties, a night patrol would just be walking along the street. You might send a section halt when you came to a square or a crossroads. Send one section up one street, a section up the opposite street, wait for them to return, then move on. Again, just reassuring everyone. And you know, people were very aware that we were there because this was a nightly thing. It was happening all the time, and it would have reassured. If you were actually searching houses because the intelligence was that someone might be there, you know, you would do precisely that. And my role at that point would be to be in the search for houses with the policeman and a backup section. Otherwise, it was just a trail of keeping the peace and being seen.
Okay, so whilst you were out in patrol, there wasn't a specific point that you would be in this group formation, was there?
Yes, there was, insofar as you know, you were leading the patrol, and you can only do that from the front. There might be a point section a section up front, but you'd be with the corporal who would be leading that section, and he would be saying second in line in the section, a machine gunner perhaps up front, something like that, whatever the formation was appropriate at the time. And you would be alongside them at the front, making sure that we were following the right route, be it in town or the country, and being available with the policeman to talk to anyone that you might want to talk to gain information, or just to generally chat and be friendly.
And would the policeman have been up near you as well? Would he have been quite close to you?
Yeah, he was never more than a yard or two away from me.
Okay. And would you have just been carrying your rifles, or would you have had them in a fixed position or something?
Yes, just at the ready. In the countryside, it might be possible to just sling them, in other words, on your shoulder, because there were long stretches of just barren ground, no one there, no animal life, just nothing except banana palms. And you might sling them there. But whenever you were, if you were in town or if you were entering a village, you would have rifles at the ready, because that's how a soldier ought to look. And it's reassuring to see him carrying his weapon properly at the ready, rather than slung on his shoulder.
Okay. And you mentioned a machine gunner up at the front. Would you have had anything else apart from rifles with you?
On these patrols, I mean, each platoon, each jock, an officer has a rifle, but each section, so there are three sections in a platoon, had a machine gun. So three soldiers in the platoon would not have a rifle, they would be carrying a light machine gun, it was in those purposes, replaced by a general purpose machine gun. So three would be carrying machine guns, the rest would be carrying rifles. We also had in each platoon a 2-inch mortar and an anti-tank, a rocket launcher, but we didn't take those out and patrol with us. I mean, there were no vehicles on the so-called enemy side. There wasn't really an enemy, so you didn't need your mortars or anti-tank weapons. They were left back in the armory.
Okay. And how many men would have been in this patrol?
30. Yes, a platoon. The establishment for a platoon in those days was 32, and we had four platoons of very close to that. I think the company might have been under-established by half a dozen, say. So we were certainly about 30 strong, each platoon.
And you mentioned going out at night. The villages that you were going into and such like, was there street lights that you could see, or did you have to take some type of mobile light or something with you?
Zanzibar was very poorly lit. I do remember that. Down at the port, there was a little bit of light. There was a sort of main square, a sort of front. In other words, the port area would have been lit, but not lit as we truly understand it. It would be, in this country, be regarded as very gloomy and dark. And the rest of the town was precisely that, dark. So it was poorly and in parts not at all lit.
And did you have anything with you? You know, any type of lighting with you?
No, we were equipped with torches, but we didn't need those. I mean, your night vision comes along. I think we was told it came in about 15 minutes, and it certainly does, you know. It's never totally dark, is it? You can always see enough not to bump into the chap in front of you.
And you mentioned going into the houses as well. Did you ever catch anyone in any of these houses?
I certainly never made an arrest in Zanzibar, and I don't think any of the other platoons did. It was an island, and if anyone who had reason to believe that he was being hunted thought anyone was getting close to him, it was so easy to get into a boat in a little island like that and just move back to the mainland. So No, I didn't think. I'd like to think I was accurate about this. I certainly, my platoon never made a rest. I don't remember any of the other platoons either.
And you mentioned two types of patrol, an 8-hour or a 36-hour patrol. The 8-hour, would that have been doing what you've just described?
Yes, that exactly that. That was just a day patrol.
Okay.
Just being seen in town or in the country.
Okay.
And then the longer one was just to, the purpose of it was precisely the same, just to be seen, and the longer you were out, the more you were going to be seen, so it just changed our routine, that's all.
And for your 36-hour patrol, did you sleep out in the open or something?
Yes, we did, that was never a hardship there. We didn't even carry a blanket roll because it wasn't necessary. It was so warm. Middle of the night, it was very, very warm.
And so you just slept where you happened to be. And I do remember one night when we suddenly, I was sleeping alongside Jim Hutton, my platoon sergeant, and he and I, as one, leapt to our feet because a column of soldier ants had just gone through a part of the platoon, which included Jim Hutton and myself. And we were covered in these soldier ants, which are about an inch long, and in our hair and everywhere, and biting like... And fortunately, we were on the beach, and we were able just to run into the sea and... submerge ourselves until most of the ants left us. But yes, that's what we did. You just camped out and set your guard, so not everyone was asleep, but you just slept where you were, and it was so hot, you didn't need anything.
Okay. And was there ever any other wild animals that would have bothered you there?
No, there weren't. We believe that we once saw a leopard, and someone said it's possible. They believed that a leopard had been sighted before, but it wasn't like Kenya, which is just filled with game, large and small. There was very, very little. There are tiny little things, one or two tiny little gazelle-like creatures, but it was really totally bereft of wildlife, sizable stuff. I mean, butterflies and that sort of thing, yes. But no real wildlife at all.
Okay. And whilst you were out for a 36-hour patrol, what did you do about food and water and such like?
Well, we took rations with us, but after a bit, you could certainly carry your tins of beans and sausages and so on, but they weren't particularly appetizing. It was very hot, and you find you don't need to eat much in the heat. And we'd all got really tired of our tinned rations anyway, because that's largely what we ate anyhow when we were in camp. And I did mention whether we were lucky because it was the season, but there were bananas growing wild everywhere. And in the end, on our 36-hour patrol, that's what we ate. And our medical officer told us, Dr. Cameron, told us that they were very good for you. So. Full of vitamins and nutrition, so we ate bananas and didn't need to carry any stuff at all.
And what about water?
Yes, we took water with us, and if necessary, you could be resupplied for water, which was necessary because it was hot and thirsty. And if we couldn't find water locally, we had the company headquarters could send out. We were in radio contact all the time with our platoon signaller. Could always have signalled back for water.
Was it safe to drink the local water?
I don't remember that, and we were always encouraged not to. A local village water supply could well be contaminated, and we were encouraged not to. We did have clean water in camp, and on a day patrol, it's no problem. Your water bottle would see you through the day without any trouble. 36 hours would be longer, and we'd probably be resupplied.